You're listening to A Week in Wireless by telecoms.com, the podcast dedicated to everything and anything going on in the telecoms biz. On today's A Week in Wireless, Samsung is still hilarious, Samsung's sizzling Note 7 saga is still hilarious, and finally, Samsung is still hilarious. All that and more on today's A Week in Wireless. Do you want to join the argument? Tweet us at telecoms. Hello and welcome to A Week in Wireless, the podcast brought to you by telecoms.com. As always, my name is Tim Skinner, and joining me today is Scott Buccino.
Hello.
And it's Jamie Davies.
Hello, Tim.
Now, I thought about trying to make a witty pun about how hilarious everything at Samsung is at the moment, but I just thought it's just too hilarious to even pun about, so let's just get straight into it.
Well, yeah,
their phones are still melting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've explored the sort of melting, burning, heating, exploding sort of variations in... It's just been the gift that keeps on giving for about a month now. The first story I wrote on it was early September when the first ones were overheating. And then it was just a bit embarrassing. And it was just like, oh dear, bit of a screw up. You know, that's a bit embarrassing, isn't it? And then they went, oh yeah, sorry about that. Bring them in and we're going to manufacture special ones that definitely don't blow up under any circumstances. Even if you put them in a fire, they'd just be like, nah, no worries. And so they swapped them for that. And then those ones started blowing up. And it's just like, damn.
And they never got to the bottom of what was causing these things
well,
to blow up.
I mean, when I first reported on it, it was supposedly a battery.
Yeah.
So what they've got, I've got, rather worryingly, I've got a Samsung phone. But it's a Galaxy S7.
You've got one of the safe ones.
Yeah, I got a Galaxy S7, which in the months I've had it hasn't blown up. And there are no reports, I should stress, Samsung lawyers, of Galaxy S7's blowing up.
It's also not on the aviation's watch list or
exactly
banned things to take on.
But the reason I bring it up is it does have a fast charge. If you use the Samsung charging cable, it charges pretty quickly.
Right.
And that apparently was one of the things. So they've got this battery in the Note, which is obviously going to be a bigger battery because it's a bigger device.
Yeah.
But they got this fast charge thing. And incidentally, just if it wasn't sort of comical enough for Samsung, the battery's made by another type of Samsung.
Lols.
Yeah, yeah. So a special sort of... Because Samsung's this massive, diverse sort of conglomerate. And they've got a bit of it that makes batteries.
Yeah.
And so there's this battery made, and there's this fast charge technology, and there's all that sort of stuff. And for some reason, it's just gone horribly wrong. And presumably, the first time it went wrong, there were just thousands of Samsung people just stressing out about it 24/7.
Yeah.
And they haven't been able to get to the bottom of it somehow. And it's just costing them a ton of money, what was writing about today. So earlier on this week, they went, yeah, you know, we were giving you our Q3 forecast and we thought we're going to make this much profit. Well, you can knock about $2.5 billion off that for starters.
Yeah.
And everyone went, okay. And then today they went, oh yeah, and Q4 and Q1... knock about another $3 billion off them.
Yeah.
So about $5.5 billion just for this thing screwing up. So that's a pretty expensive screw up, isn't it?
Well, it is pretty costly.
There's no two ways about it.
Well, exactly. Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. But I mean, it was a bit... For Samsung, obviously, it is a big kick in the teeth because this was meant to be the big iPhone 7 challenger.
Indeed.
At least sort of ostensibly.
In terms of timing, yeah. I mean, the one I've got is the other one, but that's launched in the spring. This launch coincides with the big Apple launch. So Yeah.
And I did work on an enormously over-the-top piece of alliteration.
Okay.
I'm a little bit hesitant to actually sort of say it out loud because I feel like I'm going to get it completely wrong.
Well, that'll be funny. I'd laugh if you screw it up.
Let's go for it then. I think it's Samsung finally faces facts and finally, let's say, extinguishes the flammable phablet farce.
Hey.
Ah, yes, there we go. I'm proud of that.
Very good. I like a bit of alliteration.
So yeah, I think, I think we've covered it enough. I don't think we need to go into any more exhaustive detail about it unless either of you have points that you fancy making about this.
No, Jamie, your phone hasn't blown up?
No. Motorola are doing a decent little job.
There we are.
There you go.
Yep. And your iPhone hasn't blown up.
No, not as yet.
And my Samsung phone hasn't. So, well done, Samsung.
Well done.
So, I suppose to draw a line under it, the interesting thing is, from a business point of view, is the brand. Because Samsung said, OK, we fixed it, and they didn't, they then launch another Note and go, this one's fine, people can go, but you said that before. So that's where they've got a real branding problem, even in a year's time. So they had to write off $5 billion for this one. But who's to say that they're going to be able to resurrect the category at all? And let's not forget, Samsung invented the category. The Note was the first what we call a phablet.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, phone and tablet sort of merged into one, i.e. sort of 6 inches plus.
Good portmanteau.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So they invented the category, and they're in very grave danger of just having to leave it entirely. You know, is just calling the next one a Note 8 going to be enough?
Well, I was thinking about this, and maybe they could go, you know, completely the other way and completely rebrand it so it's not the Note 7 or the Note 8 or whatever. They can call it something like Ice. You know, just a hint that it's definitely cold.
But how much is everyone going to take the piss if they try stuff
or
like that?
Or just hit it straight down the middle and just call it Flame Retardant Phablet.
Yeah. I think, they've got to just whistle nonchalantly and hope it's all forgotten.
And just accept hands in pockets.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, no, that was ages ago. It's all forgotten now. just a complete different name. Maybe get it out of the Galaxy, because there's a worry of this contaminating the Galaxy brand, which is still perfectly good in the form of my phone.
Yeah.
So that's
I mean,
the
could
real
they,
one.
Could they spin it out as sort of like a different organisation and then just sort of distance themselves completely from it, but still have it under the Samsung Corporation?
I suppose, but that's not going to help with trust, is it? Well, they're sort of putting it at the other end of the room and sort of trying to stay as far away from it as possible. Yeah, you just stay over there, mate.
Well, in all fairness, that's very advisable with their phones at the moment.
Quite.
So.
Well, quite. Exactly, yeah. I mean, it was less than 100 phones that it happened to, of the millions that are
and
in circulation.
So far, yeah.
Yeah, that they have been made aware of.
Let's say that sort of order of magnitude anyway. A minute fraction, yeah.
Yeah. I think they revealed numbers on... at the time of recording, being Friday last week for you guys listening, I think they said it was less than 100.
Right.
Actually
reported.
Reported to have melted down. So it's a very minute percentage, but obviously you just don't want to have that risk. But because of things like Twitter, and it's immediately reported upon when these things do happen. You know, by the time when the first story broke, it was only like 3 models that had this happen to them. So already at that point this enormous sort of deal had been made about how flammable these things were.
Exactly, and social media, it just spreads and everyone starts, you get all these little memes.
But it's also like when that kid was going into the Apple store and just trying to break iPhones and going, yeah, see, look, they bend. It's like, well you're putting all of your weight onto the phone trying to snap it, like, of course it's going to break. But then this huge deal was made about how the iPhone 6 was bendable or whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're going to come on to some of that later, but Twitter especially, but the internet on the whole does like to get something and run with it.
Well, yeah, it does that. It does that very well. Okay, now moving on to Yahoo, who's been having a funny week as well. They've been relentlessly shooting themselves in the foot, as we put it. Scott, now that you've finished dicking about with your microphone, do you fancy telling us what's been going on with Yahoo's sort of skeletons in its cupboard, should we say?
Yeah, sorry about that, and sorry, listeners. I just wasn't happy with how I was coming over on that other one, so I thought I'd try this mic instead.
Oh, fair enough.
I think we can all agree that it does full justice to my dulcet tones. anyway, Yahoo. Yeah, another one. I mean, on the whole... It's been a tough week for a lot of big companies. The Yahoo thing, I think we've spoken about it before, but Verizon's looking to buy it. And almost from the second it went, yeah, we'll have that, there's just been this stuff coming out.
It's like Verizon put the bid in, Yahoo went, yes, like took it and went, oh, thank God, now we can tell someone about all of this that's been going on for the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's almost like when they signed the deal, Yahoo had one hand behind its back with its fingers crossed. Going, ah, ha, ha, ha. So they originally had this thing where there was apparently a massive sort of hack where loads of user data was leaked 2 years ago. And that broke about a month or two ago. And then more recently,
how many accounts was it that like breached?
It was half a billion.
Half a billion people. Half a billion. And we all said, you what? Half a billion people used Yahoo?
Yeah. Well, I think that's more of a UK thing. I think in the US it's actually a thing. But over here we've kind of relegated it to the likes of like Ask Jeeves. CompuServe and Netscape Navigator and all that
proper,
sort of stuff.
Yeah, sort of proper 90s internet.
Yeah, remember those, listener?
More recently there was a story about it sort of creating a sort of backdoor or colluding with intelligence services to let them spy on people's emails, specifically to let them keyword search.
But at the same time, you can't really blame sort of Yahoo 100% here, because while they did... sort of cooperate with an international agency. Yeah, reportedly. It's not like they did it of their own accord. I mean, ultimately, they were forced to by an international court.
Yeah, you're saying they didn't go out to CIA and go, look, can we do any sort of casual spying for you? No, I mean, I take your point, but then...
yeah, apparently, we're going down the there, so we're looking for a career change. How are you? How are you guys set for spies?
Quite frankly, we're game for anything right now.
Marissa's throwing her toys out of the pram, so we're looking for something new to do.
I mean, that is a defence, but all their sort of competitor, the big sort of internet companies like Google or Facebook or whoever, are all coming out and saying, "Well, if they ask us to do that, we'd tell them to shove it." Whether or not they would, I don't know. And it's a really difficult one because PR-wise for those companies, if they get a reputation as colluding with intelligence services, then there's a massive loss of trust for their users. So they're all going to come out and say they wouldn't do it. But, yeah, fair point, Jamie. It's probably not as simple as that. Sometimes, you know, if some bloke with a great big FBI T-shirt on is staring at you, you're going to feel a bit compelled to obey.
I mean, I'm quite liking what... I know this is slightly off-topic, but I'm quite liking what sort of Microsoft and DT are doing at the moment with their sort of their third-party data agreements in Germany. Right. You know, there was all this fuss about sort of Microsoft and housing data in Ireland, and should the CIA be able to get access to that because it's housed somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft just turned around and said, well, actually, we're going to let Deutsche Telekom house all our data. You are the third party that gives permission to other people to access this data. So we're a US company, but because we don't have our hands on it, the CIA can't force us to do anything. They have to come straight.
So they basically said, taken it out of the jurisdiction of the US intelligence services.
So they said this, I mean, where they were before was Microsoft is a US company, so in theory, it should have to answer to US courts and to US intelligence agencies, but they just put all the data in the jurisdiction of Deutsche Telekom in Europe. Yeah. So they're saying, well, hold on, it's our data, but we've signed a legal agreement to say we don't have any control over it.
And this is, it's interesting, I mean, this is a big thing with the safe harbour and the privacy shield or whatever they're calling it.
Privacy shield,
yeah. It's, you know, data.
Or we're in the UK, so privacy shield.
There we go. Sorry, mate. I stand corrected.
Thank you. Data,
you know, whose problem is it? Because it's not a thing. You don't have a bucket of data. But so it comes down to which servers it's sitting on, doesn't it?
Well, I think part of, I mean, that's part of what the new regulations are coming in 2 years' time. The European, let me get this right, the EU General Data Protection Regulation, which is EU GDPR. Uh-huh. So that's coming in 2018, and that allows the user to have more control over the data, and they get to dictate how data is essentially used.
Right.
Which, again, throws another spanner in the works. You know, if who owns the data? Is it the company who collects it, or is it the user? You know, when the government goes in to access the data, do they have to clear it through the courts, through the companies themselves, or do they in theory have to go to the user to access the data because they own it? But at the same time, what's the point in doing that? Because if you've got a terrorist that you're trying to investigate, he's hardly going to turn around and go, hey, tell you what, here's my password to my Yahoo account. You know, assuming he's one of those half a billion people that uses Yahoo,
and it's probably already somewhere on the internet anyway. Yeah. His password.
Yeah,
Yahoo
well,
account.
No, it's already out there now. So yeah, so I mean, it makes a complete mess of the situation.
It is very messy. But just to steer that back. From that very commendable tangent.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic tangential skills.
The thing that has made it newsworthy this week is Verizon has actually come out, their chief counsel, or whatever they call
General counsel,
top lawyer. Yeah, there we go. Do you think he lives in a council house?
No,
dad joke. Okay.
I was going to go for more, shouldn't there be a specific counsel as opposed to a general counsel?
Well, there we are. Yeah. He's got to make his mind up.
Yeah. Yes. Or a colonel counsel.
Colonel counsel?
Because we've got general counsel.
Oh, I see, right. Yeah. All right.
No?
Enough.
No. All right. And if you've got any counsel puns...
Yeah, he's come out, this bloke, and said, do you know what? I'm not so sure about all this Yahoo stuff. To be quite frank, it's not what we thought it was a few months ago when we signed on the dotted line.
Well, yeah, we didn't sign up for this.
Yeah. Initially they were going, well, we're going to have to pay less, like $1 billion less.
Yeah.
Now they're sort of going, look, Yahoo, you really better tell us everything and stop messing us around here, or we might just bail. Yep. And then, you know, we're not that sure. Jamie, you're the one who looked into this. We're not, the precedent for bailing when you've signed on dotted line is tricky. But
yeah, well, I think what he's one of the things he turned around to say, and he's actually said to the Yahoo execs, it's like, you have to prove that this. Oh, well, apparently, just to get clear it out there, just so I don't have people writing back to me angrily, I wasn't actually at the press conference.
No.
So this is partly hearsay.
Yeah. But it was widely reported.
He's turned around to the execs and said, you have to prove that these scandals, most notably the data breach, have not impacted the value or performance of Yahoo as a business.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
That's something we alluded to earlier was, you know, how do you separate, firstly, the damage that the data breach has done, and secondly, 5 or 6 years of mismanagement from Yahoo execs that haven't been able to adapt to the new internet age. Mm. You know, what's
send
either way,
very good signals.
Yeah. But so it's a tricky one.
And just to sort of finish off this bad week for companies, a company we write about a lot, Ericsson, big networking company, they announced that basically their Q3 numbers are not going to be good at all. There's not a really sort of chirpy angle on it. The long and short of it is Ericsson's been trying to sort of transform, redesign itself, really diversify away from just selling networking gear to things like professional services. They've got a big media operation to do with TV transmission and that sort of thing, getting into software, OSS, BSS, that sort of stuff. But the problem is the rate of decline of their traditional networking business has been greater than the rate at which the other stuff's picking up the slack.
Yeah.
It's also been having a great big cost reduction program, and it hasn't been able to lay people off fast enough. So it's a bit of a gloomy picture for them. And actually, you know, we don't pick a team here. We don't pick winners. We're not biased in favour of Ericsson or Huawei or Nokia or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's only three big network players, so it would be sad to see them sort of really continue to struggle. So fingers crossed there.
Yeah, well, it has been a bit of a turbulent time for Ericsson over the last few months in general. I mean, Vestberg, their CEO, stood down and all of that jazz. So it's not been an easy time for them over the last few months, has it?
No, and you know, how to turn it around. Obviously, you'd be surprised to hear this, but I've never been the CEO of a major multinational company.
No?
But guessing, you know, it's like changing, sort of trying to do a three-point turn in a super tanker, isn't it?
Right.
You
yeah.
can't just go to everyone, get them in a room, and go, right, let's sort this out.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult thing to do. So, yeah, sorry, Ericsson, I don't have any easy answers for you there.
Because no doubt they're tuning into the show to get answers to their corporate crisis.
They're like, wow, not even Scott knows. Now we're really in trouble.
On that note, we're going to go for a very quick break. We'll come back to start talking about people who are poking their nose into the internet's business. Stick with us.
We know you love us here at A Week in Wireless, so why don't you follow us on Twitter? Tweet us using the hashtag AWIW. Let us know what you think, and we'll tell you what we think of you on next week's episode.
I promise we'll be back, and we are back. And welcome back to A Week in Wireless, the podcast brought to you by telecoms.com. This part of the show, we're going to be talking about people just sticking their nose and poking their oar, or whatever you want to say, for getting into the internet's face.
Mm.
Scott, you wrote this one. The GSMA has been sticking its oar in because it wants the commission to stick its oar in. Jamie's just freaking out over the other side of the table. Is everything all right there, mate?
I just dropped my pen.
Oh, okay.
He got so excited he dropped his pen.
GSMA has basically asked the European Commission to overrule the Dutch regulator because it's made a relatively controversial decision. Scott, why don't you fill us in?
Yeah, so, I mean, the subject matter is quite technical, but the implications are not. The Dutch Parliament has gone for this internet bill that basically says no zero rating, which, for anyone who isn't familiar with it, says that you can't have some services where you don't hit your data allowance, or you don't get charged for your data.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that's obviously very tempting for things like streaming music or streaming video services. If you want to try and sell a streaming music service and you bundle it with zero rating, that's obviously a lot more attractive, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they said you can't do that. The Dutch have. Right. But Europe...
For any reasons in particular? They just don't like
one of
it.
One of those things where their parliament just goes, we're not happy with this.
Right.
bloody Dutch being hideous again, isn't it?
Well, you know, they were
after Jamie's outburst last week. Yeah, we do apologise to any Dutch listeners who are offended by Jamie's comments.
Yes. And I'm not going to compound it by attempting a Dutch accent now.
No, we don't want to lose our Dutch audience forever, Scott.
Or making generalisations about everyone being stoned the whole time. That would be terrible.
No.
So I definitely won't do that. Okay.
Can we get to the point?
Yes. Which is, so they come out of the law, and then, but Europe's trying this sort of digital single market thing where if the whole of Europe has the same sort of laws to do with the digital world, then it'll all be harmonised and we'll all live happily ever after, and there won't be any more world wars and that sort of thing.
That'd be nice.
It would be nice. I think there's not many people who are sort of pro-world war. But they're actually going, nah, we don't fancy it. And the GSMA, which is the trade body that's for operators and telcos in general, came out with this comment saying, well, Europe should make the Dutch change their law. And I just thought, firstly, it's interesting that GSMA were quite as strident as they were on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of their members, T-Mobile, has launched a zero-rating music service in Holland, so maybe it's just got their back.
Right.
But the broader one is, I suppose, you know, it's come up in conversation on this podcast before, the old Brexit thing, which is European sovereignty versus national sovereignty.
Yeah.
So we had the thing a little while back where Europe said Apple's got to pay Ireland a ton of back taxes.
Oh, yeah.
And Ireland was like, nah, we're all right, they're good, they're grand.
Right. Nice.
And so again, that was European sovereignty versus Irish sovereignty, and this is European versus Dutch. And it's just going to be interesting to see how it plays out, because this stuff's going to keep happening. You know, there's not every country's making such a big statement as we have with the Brexit vote, but lots of other countries aren't happy about being told what to do the whole time.
No, and I think, you know, we won't get onto a full-on Brexit discussion, but it has sort of started to get other countries thinking.
Yeah, well, that's always the danger, isn't it? Thin end of the wedge and all that.
Oh, I thought you meant thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to do that. You leave that to me, sweet cheeks.
That would seem particularly appropriate for you to say to Jamie, since you guys are sharing a microphone at the moment.
No, you just leave the thinking and the talking to me.
Yeah.
You just sit there and look pretty.
It has, listener, been an eventful podcast for the microphone. and then the broader topic, and I'll hand over to Jamie because he's written another thing that's sort of related to this. Broader topic is just the policing of the internet, full stop. In this case, it's the policing of whether you can charge for certain stuff on the internet or not.
Yeah.
Or specifically the data service to deliver that stuff. And then, Jamie, you wrote a piece about the UK passing a law about what people can get nicked for saying online. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it's the CPS, so the Crown Prosecution Service in the UK, have passed they put out guidance to police forces to say this is what you can prosecute for online behavior, as it were. You know,
so sort of like abuse, trolling, stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, trolling's a big one. Cyberbullying's a big one.
Yeah.
And there's this thing called doxing.
Doxing.
D-O-X-X-I-N-G, I think it is. And it's basically when people put bank details or home addresses
sensitive information
online about someone else.
So basically, let's say in the case of when Yahoo got hacked and a whole bunch of personal details were stolen and posted online, that's doxing.
I think it's more individual. For instance,
me getting hold of your stuff and sticking it on the internet.
Yeah, you know, you were a bit of a chode on Friday night, so I'm just going to put your bank details up on.
Did you use the word chode at me?
Well, yeah.
What is that, a Welsh thing?
No,
let's not describe it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, whatever you do, if you are listening to this and you don't know what it is, do not Google it on your work computer. Do not Google it on your work computer.
Can we move on from this conversation?
But essentially, it's me getting revenge on you by putting some personal information online.
Right, okay.
Then people react, they sign you up to loads of junk mail or something like that, so you get thousands of likes.
And there's another thing of like putting up naked pictures of people that's been around for a while, isn't
it? That's revenge porn. But you can get taken to court for that as well.
That was already...
Yeah, that was already in there. But, I mean, the one thing that it is... I mean, where do you draw the line?
In terms of what should be criminalised?
Yeah, I mean, how would you say what's offensive and what's banter? Because, you know, I made the point in an article, like, last week, I made a joke about the Dutch. If that was taken
out
of context...
That we got away with, but you keep bringing up...
Yeah. if that was taken out of context, should I be taken to court? What's banter? I mean, banter for us three might be, you might have some idiot sat down the road in some bloody public sector organisation who says, "Oh, I don't like that."
Yeah.
I want someone to take him to court for that.
Well, okay, so then you get into the realm of is the person who's reporting the quote unquote crime. Are they the recipient of the crime, or are they just observing something? So if someone was listening to this podcast and went, "I'm extremely offended that Jamie called him a chode, and I'm going to report him for that," yeah. Surely it's down to me whether I feel like I've been victimised by that.
I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an interesting point and one that I didn't think of at the time and one I didn't look into. But as far as I'm aware, from reading the documents that were given to me, it wasn't defined.
Yeah.
My issue with a lot of stuff that's going on.
It's the vague parameters.
Yeah.
And the problem is, we accept that if, let's say, some people are organising an organised hate campaign against an individual online, then that individual deserves to be protected.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
And if you were to translate that into the real world, if you were stood in the high street on a Saturday afternoon with a bunch of signs that said Jamie Davis lives at the top of the Brecon Beacons, go to his house and abuse him, then that is inciting trouble.
It is,
right?
It is. So, it's harassment.
Yeah,
it is
exactly,
harassment.
Yeah.
I mean, there are certain cases where it's very clear-cut and there's certain ones where it's not, and it's just... Mm. But, I mean that is tricky.
Mm.
But I think there's so many implications, and I think we were all talking about it earlier in the week. There's so many implications off the back of this. Like, for instance, I've got here now... Is this going to mean that police officers are going to go after low-hanging fruits? Because it's easy to prosecute someone, in that easy to get numbers and improve their statistics.
Yeah, hit your bonus for doing a bunch of 16-year-olds cussing each other on Twitter.
Yeah. Go after that instead of serious crimes. Is that going to distract police?
Then you get into the position where you're potentially belittling something that is taken very seriously by the victim in certain instances.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's very much a judgment call.
Yeah, 100%.
Because if someone is feeling perpetually harassed, so that it's not just a bit of abuse on Twitter, and it gets to the point where people are spam mailing them stuff in their house or going to their house or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not for any of us to determine whether that's a relevant crime.
But those
crime or
those
not.
Massive harassment campaigns, they're not the ones I'm talking about. It's the smaller, more minor stuff, someone insulting you over online, and it's a case of cyberbullying now.
Right.
Where do you draw the line?
Yeah, it's tough.
But and then the other thing that really got me, it was the hate crime sort of thing.
Definition of
they boxed it up in the announcements. And it was launched during Hate Crime Awareness Week.
Oh, yeah. Not Hate Crime Week. They were encouraging it.
No. Hate Crime... They launched this in Hate Crime Awareness Week. And then at the same time, hate crime was all the way through the press release. And I'm just like, how on earth is this on the same par as what happened in World War II? It trivialises so much hate crime.
It's the spectrum. And when you've got an incredibly broad spectrum all covered under one bit of legislation or one bit of terminology, then it's very hit and miss, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, my bit is the censorship part of it. I'm quite anti-censorship. I think people should, as is known, I quite often like to walk the fine line of good taste with my humour. And I think sometimes you don't know whether something's funny or not until you say it.
Until you get pulled up in front of HR.
And that's why one of the reasons I'm anti-censorship is people have got to be free to sort of express themselves. Obviously, within reason, and that comes back to our central point of where's the line drawn.
Yeah.
But, the more of these laws there are, the more censored we're going to be.
Mm. Yeah. That was good chat, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Other UK government stuff you've been looking at, Jamie, is there kind of don't forget us too about AI?
Yeah. I mean, they're weighing into the AI arguments now, or AI development. And it's not just the UK, it is the US as well, because they released the reports like 2 days later.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically how governments can get involved with the developments and implementation of AI.
Yeah.
And some of it, you can see why they're doing it. There was a section in both the reports about education, and they said the education system, especially in the school level, isn't suited for the data economy. You know, we're not teaching our kids in their teen years the right skills to go into the digital economy.
Yeah, right.
So the everything needs to change there. Mm-hmm. Well, not everything needs to change, but they need to make the curriculum create data literate students.
Yes.
As opposed to traditional education, which we went through.
Yeah, sure. Well, that's tailoring the needs of a generation.
100%. And that's part of what they pulled up. They said, we're not doing that at the moment. So,
well, because one day we're going to need one of these sort of 7-year-olds to save humanity from AI. Yeah. They need to be able to decode it.
Well, that's what I found. And so Jamie wrote a great piece on it, nice and long. And when I was sort of editing it or proofing it, one of the things I found interesting is one of my bugbears, which is that, you know, that Terminator style, when AI gets so good that the computers come self-learning and self-aware.
Which we talked about
and all that
week.
Sort of thing. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was one of the things that came up. You know, it's not just my paranoia. They are going, look, you know, we can't just let this stuff run completely unfettered because, you know, one day we will be running away from killer robots. And then who'll come crying to us?
Who all look like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was one of the things that they brought up, the ethics side of things. How do you make sure that the decision-making process in the algorithm from the computer is transparent, so it's remaining inside the parameters you set.
Yeah.
But also the ethics came into it. Should we be training these AI engineers? Should we be sending them on ethics courses and all that sort of thing? Mm. You know, do they understand ethics before they try and program it? Can you even define it?
Yeah.
It's all very philosophical.
Yeah. Oh, we did do this last week.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. To be fair.
Sorry,
I wasn't here, right?
Well, I'd hoped you'd have listened to it, Scott.
Yeah, I did. It's great.
But, yeah, nice.
I mean, the final thing, they did have a lot of good points, I'd like to add, about this report.
Uh-huh.
They did have a lot of good points. But the one thing that really got me, it was such a pompous, self-righteous report from start to finish. And they thought that, and I got the impression...
That from the government.
I know.
Yeah.
But I got the impression, just from reading both reports, both the US and the UK, uh-huh. it's... I'm sorry, guys. How'd you get this far without us? Mm-hmm. You know, but don't worry. We're here now.
We'll help
you.
We'll take it from here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there were so many. I'll read out. I mean, I've got it here in front of me now, and I'll read out a couple of quotes from
go
that
it.
I pulled out.
Yeah, go for
and
it.
One of them was to. This is from the UK report. Was to provide much needed direction and coordination. Just from reading that, I spotted a typo in my story there, so I'm going to go back and correct that. Then there was another one that from the US reports was, given the strategic importance of AI, moreover, it is appropriate for federal government to monitor developments in the first worldwide. And I was just like, well, how important do you think you guys are? Mm. And then they were talking about funding that needs to go into it. And I just got the whole report just said to me,
yeah.
Despite the good points you made, back up for a second. You're not that important.
Do you know what I did like about one of the things you said there is the UK government said there's been a lack of strategic direction, or there will be a lack of strategic direction without the government, as if to suggest these guys are just currently sort of just mindlessly randomly creating anything with intelligence, just going, AI over there. Let's have some AI over there and more AI over there.
Well, let's hear it. No, this doesn't need AI, this bit.
But I mean, it gets me. I mean, government has a role. It's regulation. It's policy. It's society.
Yeah.
But I mean, let's not forget. Let's use Google as an example because Google is it is a titan in the world of technology.
Mm-hmm.
They've got better engineers there.
It's funny that they've also got a project called Titan.
They do. That was unintentional, but I'll take it.
I mean, it wasn't great.
They've also got a project called Get On With It.
So they've got better engineers, they've got better insights to where the industry is developing, and they've got more cash. So, I mean, they're not that great. You know, the government help isn't going to set the world on fire.
No. Like I said at the start, it was it's kind of them just going, me too.
Yeah, we yeah, want in
we,
on
we
this.
Need,
yeah.
We need to be we involved with this. Yeah. Yeah, well, cool. Moving on. the bromance between BT and Virgin is dead, it seems.
Right, that bromance that you first covered a little while ago.
A little while back, where basically Virgin had BT's back in the face of sort of just continual...
Aggro.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah, it's all to do with... it's all the UK-based, it's all to do with Fixed Line and Openreach and BT.
Yeah.
Basically, everyone else moaning that ET doesn't do enough with Openreach to help them out, people like Sky... and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, but we've covered then, that enough. That
we covered that enough. But then we thought the bromance was over because it turned out they grassed them up to the Advertising Standards Authority. Ooh. Over some ad. Again, it was quite technical. BT did an ad. You know what these broadband ads are like. They always use speedometers and stuff, don't they?
Yeah.
Because basically the selling point of broadband is normally speed.
Yeah.
Even though we're probably getting to the stage where anything above, I don't know, whatever, 50 megabits per second is a bit redundant.
Yeah.
I mean, you could download stuff a bit quicker, but certainly for streaming and that sort of thing.
Yeah. We're at least until 4K becomes a really big
well,
deal.
Well, indeed.
At which case we'll have to go.
Or VR.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's
all
a good
that
point.
Jazz. But we'll always find some use for it. But the point is that the way in which they try and sell themselves is on speeds and feeds.
Sure.
And so they went and did this ad back in April where they had these speedometers up there and they were specifically comparing themselves to Sky. They said our entry level fibre is about 52 megabits per second, whereas Sky's is only 38, so no.
Yep.
And Virgin was like, well, I'm sorry, it looks too much like you're comparing yourself to the whole rest of the industry rather than just Sky. So it's quite a technical complaint.
Yeah.
But it was upheld. The thing that made me laugh when I was writing about it, this is April, yeah?
Yeah.
We're now in October.
Yeah.
BT's already got a massive new advertising campaign for all that BT TV stuff.
Yeah? Oh, yeah.
And the Advertising Standards goes, yeah, you can't use that ad anymore.
At a point at which it's entirely redundant.
Yeah, and BT's like, oh, right. Then.
Oh, damn. Yeah.
So it's a little bit redundant.
While Virgin's going, chalk up another win for Virgin.
another win for the V team. So they were being all chummy a couple of months ago, and now they're grassing each other up. So the bromance is over, was our little quirky take on it all.
Oh, that's sad to hear, isn't it? You never like hearing of these guys splitting up.
And Tim, BT consoled themselves by going and hanging out with old people.
Yeah, well, as I put it here in the article, nothing helps bring a divided nation together like a condescending marketing campaign highlighting the older generation's difficulty keeping a pace with the rapidly evolving world of technology.
There we go.
And what happened here is that BT did just that and launched a campaign called, quote-unquote, Grannies Try Snapchat. Which is fairly self-explanatory, to be fair. And basically what... happened was BT just gave a bunch of OAPs a smartphone with Snapchat loaded on it and then filmed their reactions.
And they were using filters and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
for anyone who's not sort of younger than 25 or perhaps even 15, Snapchat is you can look at a photo of yourself and superimpose a filter to give yourself bunny ears.
Yeah, exactly.
Or whatever.
Yeah,
and it's just a laugh a minute.
and this is while BT's trying to come over all kind of fluffy and cuddly and
you know,
grandma charming and all of that sort of stuff. And I loved it because in the press release they kind of did that. They did that thing where they almost try and drum up interest. Like, aren't you thinking this as well?
Their
opening gambit was, ever wondered what would happen if you gave grannies that have never used social media before free reign on Snapchat? Quite philosophically. And I said, it's not really a thought that's ever come up, in all honesty. Next bit. So did BT? It's like, hang on, what?
No, what? I said no.
But yeah. Anyway, so here are some of the reactions from the grannies. Anne Munro, 68, if she's listening, she's going to love this.
Mm-hmm.
Thought she looked, quote unquote, gross when she used a zombie filter.
Right, yeah. That being a point, I presume.
Why would you want a melon on your head? Pondered 68-year-old Susan Baskerville. It's a thought that all of us have had at some point or another, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then 78-year-old Helen Field is clearly very up the times because she said that Snapchat is a good way to stay in touch.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't say there were priceless reactions.
Okay. Thanks, Grandma.
Yeah. and obviously, BT, of course they did this through altruistic sort of reasons and motivations. Surely they wouldn't have any sort of other
reason for doing so.
Certainly not commercial or self-promotion or anything like that.
BT, bloody hope not, because it was terrible.
Well, quite. Well, then, at BT, we are proud to help people stay connected and have been a part of such an advancing era, said one of the directors of something or other at BT. So clearly there was some sort of self-interest involved there.
It
was
just, we got a nice generic can
just
quote.
Very,
we love them.
Very badly put together. So, yeah. And finally, not finally, almost finally, penultimately, we have another baffling outburst from our favourite American CEO, John Legere. Which is pronounced Ledger, apparently. Not the fancy French way that we've been saying it for ages. But I'm still going to call him...
Ledger outburst of the week, isn't it?
I'm still going to call him John Legere.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd just run with it.
Unless John Ledger actually writes into the show and says, can you call me John Ledger? I'm going to keep calling him John Legere. That's going to test our user base now.
He will. He will carry on calling him that until he's a guest on this pod.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Mr. Ledger, if you fancy coming down and... Legere, yeah. If you fancy coming down and joining us in the pod, then we'll get your name right for once. Yeah. How about that?
Oh, that'd be cool. Although he'd take over, wouldn't he? We'd just be bystanders.
It would be a laugh, wouldn't it? It would be a laugh. and so what he did, he had an interview last week with Business Insider, I think it was.
Mm, yeah, sounds about right.
And basically he spent the entire interview kind of spouting out some random / antagonistic / kind of indecipherable random shit about his competitors. And he started off by having a go at Verizon with a bit of sort of schadenfreude. Essentially, is going at Verizon over this whole Yahoo debacle
thing that we spoke about,
and we've covered that well enough. And he's just said, he quoted, "Verizon's a bit more befuddled." He said, "They've got the acquisitions of iconic 1990s internet companies and a leadership shift that's going on right now. Like, oh my God, you not only bought Yahoo, but they're in a mess before you bought them."
Mm-hmm. You totally told them.
Yeah. You've got to feel sorry for Verizon a little bit, though, haven't you? they've gone and bought or tried to buy Yahoo, and it's just like this shitstorm has just appeared on the horizon. That was a massive tongue tie, but I'm going to stick with it. Sorry, Tim. Carry on.
No, that's fine. Mid rant, he then turned his attentions to AT&T and did a wonderful job of using a lot of words that didn't make any sense when you put them together. I'm going to quote this verbatim. This is brilliant. "If I hear one more time that in two quarters their over-the-top offers are coming out and life's going to be grand, ... it's to protect and defend their profit streams and play a different game in the future. But every now and then we get their attention, and then they decry us. And then it's me too, but it's too late, and then it shifts."
Wow. He must spend ages over those comments.
Well, I feel like his mind is like a random word generator.
Yeah, yeah. Stream of consciousness.
It's mental.
Yeah, well, I did say, if you can make any sense of that, answers on a postcard.
Have you got any?
No. I did say we'll give him a mensch, but no one's done it, so we won't give him a mensch. And then he also slagged off Sprint about his finances and its customer bases, letting his mouth run away with him before he tried to retrospectively ignore the company altogether. So he started off by going, "I don't talk about them ever," he said. Actually, no, sorry, he said that afterwards. He said, "I don't talk about them ever," but then used a baffling metaphor about cooking eggs. And he said, "People don't fully comprehend that their economics and balance sheet have them on a timer for when you're going to cook an egg or something." Just, what the f***? That's just a whole bunch of nonsense. All of it is baffling. And then I said, "But it's good to know that his ego isn't totally running the show." Quote, "Because in X amount of time, we'll be the largest wireless player in the country by a mile." Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. Clearly it is.
All right.
Yes. Yeah. Nice one, John. Anyway, if you fancy coming onto the show and defending yourself,
totally.
Come, do it. And finally, unless you guys have any other points that you wanted to raise about that.
No, I think you've covered the ledge.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. That's good. Yeah.
Although Jamie won't like that because that'll just make his ego even bigger.
What happens when artificial intelligence stups an egg timer?
Egg timers again. They keep cropping up.
Yeah.
Stups. By that you mean sort of combines with,
boink,
but in a rude way.
You know, impregnate, whichever you want.
Bangs. You get
bangs.
An intelligent egg timer.
You meet Hello Egg. Yeah.
Hello Egg's a thing.
Yeah. This is a thing.
It's right there.
Yeah.
on the prompt sheet.
It's right there on
if
the prompt
give
sheet.
Give it a read.
That's pro radio right there.
Don't know
Jamie.
Why I bother yeah. emailing
pointing
this around.
Pointing to the prompt sheet.
Yeah.
Because well. I was trying to describe the whole process on the radio and everyone's pointing at bits of paper going, Scott, it's there.
Well, I don't know. You didn't listen to the podcast last week. So.
I did listen to it, actually. Mm. Thank you very much. Anyway, carry on.
Well, while you two squabble over in the corner, Hello Egg is the child of an old-fashioned egg timer and some very new AI technology, branded as the, quote, first smart assistant designed especially for the kitchen. This cute little gadget is a voice-operated culinary helper that boasts both a display and a personality.
Oh
how about that?
Hold on. Yeah. So what about smart fridges?
Well, exactly.
So it's got a personality, this egg timer?
Supposedly.
It's like talkie toaster. Have you ever watched Red Dwarf? There's a toaster that's got artificial intelligence on that, but it's really annoying.
I imagine this will probably be the same, because basically it's going to sit there and judge your cooking.
Right.
And go, oh, you don't want to do that. Oh, why are you doing that? Yeah. Oh, no, you've ruined it. Start again.
This is talkie toaster, big time.
And then it says, but, you know, not only do you need to have a little bit of advice, you also need to be entertained. So, you know, stream some music for you and, you know, do all that other sort of smart crap that... That literally no one in the world is going to want to have in their kitchen.
So it's kind of like a radio.
Mixed with Nigella Lawson.
Yeah, mixed
except
with...
Except without the...
Jamie, stop gesturing on radio. It doesn't work.
Without the assets.
Without, yes.
But on top of all that, it's got this AI, so it starts trying to second guess what you want. That's the annoying bit. If it's just like Siri and you said, stick on Planet Rock... That'd be one thing. But if it starts going, no, you look like a classic FM kind of guy to me, and starts making decisions for you, that just gets a bit moody.
You are making souffle. You will not listen to Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like, you sure you want eggs? You sure you don't fancy toast? F*** off!
Quite.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it. Yeah. It just seemed like a random bit of sort of IoT, AI tech. So, yeah. Anyway, see you later.
Is that it?
All right, well, that's pretty much it, isn't it, really? So thanks very much for listening to Week in Wireless. I've been Tim Skinner. Say goodbye, Scott Buccino.
Goodbye.
And say goodbye, Jamie Davies.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks very much for joining us. This has been A Week in Wireless, the podcast brought to you by telecoms.com, covering everything and anything in the telecoms industry. If you want to join the argument, tweet us at telecoms. Share your thoughts. We'll see you again next week, same place, same time, same people, but even better.